Welcome to Fully Vetted, animal care news from the clinic to the farm, presented by the Ohio Veterinary Medical Association. And here is your host, Mia Cunningham, and producer, Kristen Bennett. Welcome back to Fully Vetted, and thank you for joining us for episode 28. I'm your co-host and producer, Kristen Bennett.
And I'm Mia Cunningham.
We'd like to welcome today's guests to the show, Tabitha Cusera.
Hi.
Dr. Ken Brunson.
Hello there.
And Dr. Michelle Harkey.
Delighted to be here. Thank you. You know, this is a very broad subject. And so we're happy to have you guys here and talk about, you know, your experiences and your expertise. But at this point, if you guys wouldn't mind just taking a little time to introduce yourself, and we'll start with Tabitha.
So, hi, my name is Tabitha Cusera. I'm a registered veterinary technician, certified cat behavior consultant, Care and Prior Academy certified training partner, fear-free, low-stress handling certified. I really like behavior, which is probably what got me into compassion fatigue, and I'm a vet tech, which is very common in this field, which is why we're talking about it. I own a cat and dog behavior consulting business, and where I come in with compassion fatigue is I've struggled with it a lot, and I've been very outspoken with what I've been through. And through speaking and sharing my experiences, I've met a lot of other colleagues who have reached out for help or have basically asked, where do I get started? It's great to know that I'm not alone. So I basically am just a person that really shares my story a lot and feels like in vet med, although I love that we're acknowledging it, I don't think we're necessarily acknowledging it the way I would like, which is why I started my own panels and lectures, because I feel like I was told to do yoga and punch a pillow. And I'm not saying that that's not great, but as a behavior professional, when an animal's over threshold, you can't just have them focus and learn. And I realize that about myself. When I'm over threshold, by the time we're being told to do yoga or talk about it, we're basically swimming in compassion fatigue. So we're all over threshold, and we need to start more realistically in the field, in my experience and opinion, and start at a more realistic place and just be honest that we're here and we need to help. And it's a lot more than just yoga.
All right. I am Ken Brunson. I'm a 2014 graduate of the Iowa State University College of Veterinary Medicine, and I'm currently an associate veterinarian at Tip City Veterinary Hospital, just about 20 minutes north of Dayton, Ohio. Part of the reason I'm here is I joined the OVMA well-being committee a few years ago. A lot like Tabitha talked about, you know, we're all in this profession, we're all kind of like swimming in this culture together. And I recognized that, you know, there were some things going on in my first job that if I was there for the long haul, that would not be sustainable. And I started to pick up on these things and recognize that, you know, that I had to get out of that situation, and also recognize that when I made the transition, like there are some things that transcend one individual workplace, and it's part of a larger cultural thing in veterinary medicine. And so I joined the committee because I wanted to help address that.
Hi, I'm Dr. Michelle Harkey. I own a consulting company called Lead Your Ship. I have practiced for 10 years, mostly in Cincinnati, Ohio. I worked for Hills Pediatrician for 12 years and then served as the Director of Professional Development Education at The Ohio State University. And it was their teaching well-being, or being in charge of that part of the curriculum, that really piqued my interest. And I, too, am a member of the well-being committee, because I think these are skills that we can teach our profession and knowledge that we can give to those who may be struggling with compassion fatigue and burnout.
Well, thank you all for being here and being a part of this important conversation. We know it's a very broad topic, but we've tried to select some topics that we think would be of interest to people. And so we're just going to go ahead and jump in. You know, at this point, I think a lot of people are familiar with the problems of, you know, compassion fatigue, burnout, and suicide in the profession. But what is less discussed are the ways people end up in those situations. And I think it might be a little more nuanced than many people realize. And it's definitely something that does not happen overnight. So in your opinions, what are some of the most common threats to well-being for those in the profession?
I think some of the most common risk factors, which is why veterinary professionals and animal professionals are at so risk, is basically that repeated exposure of stressful and traumatic events. So what we're seeing every day, the amount of empathy, which I love about me and my colleagues so much, but you can't just turn it off, which is something I struggle with. So that empathy is always there. So the outpour of empathy, basically empathy fatigue, the repeated exposure of stressful events. And then also, just like Dr. Ken mentioned, unfortunately, we have, I don't think maliciously, but accidentally, we've created a culture in vet med that isn't very healthy. If you're vomiting and you feel like crap, you're going to go to work. I've puked in a garbage can between drawing blood on patients. And I'm not, again, I'm a very realistic person. We need to start being real and talking about, I think clients do play a part, but I think really it's our field. We need to recognize that we're overworking each other. Let's not glamorize never sleeping. And I haven't had a lunch in 3 weeks. I'm awesome. Like, dude, no, that's not awesome. That's horrible. But I used to glamorize that stuff. I used to think I was RoboCop. And then I hit a wall. And ideally, I would like for people to prevent from getting to that point. But I think our culture of like work, 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 you should feel bad for taking vacation, even from your colleagues who love you, when they're, so many of us are struggling with compassion fatigue that honestly, so many of us are irritable and suffer from depression and are quick to fire at other people, which I think results in a lot of toxicity in our field too. So it's just this, unfortunately, it's this vicious circle. So of course, behavior is complex. Everyone's risk factors are different. But I think what we do for a living, the people that join this field, the reason why we want to be part of this field, which we all love, but then we don't consider our needs like we do our patients. And I always say we should advocate for ourselves like we do our patients. And that's an easy thing to say, but to see veterinary practices doing it, we're far away from there. At least starting conversations, maybe we'll realize, because again, I do think clients can make our jobs somewhat difficult, but I think really at the core, it's the culture of us overworking, not having enough staff, not making a sustainable amount of money. All of these things have been super normalized in our field. You're just like, you're a vet tech, you love your job, but you can't pay your bills. You're really depressed and you're in pain because of the way you were taught to handle animals. We need to just be realistic and really start to take that culture and realize if you're not happy at your place, because I've left many practices, as Dr. Ken recognized with his practice, it's okay to leave. I left general practice and started my own business and consulting firm. And guys, whoa, was that hard. I had hardcore issues with that because I'm like, I'm not a vet tech anymore if I don't work in GP. Now that I'm looking back, I'm like, I should have left GP a long time ago. I think that we put ourselves in these boxes, including myself, and we don't feel like we're vets or vet techs if we're writing or speaking or not basically working in a practice. And there's so many amazing ways that we can contribute to the world with our education. So I think that's another part. We kind of limit ourselves and we enable each other to limit ourselves.
One thing I want to add for all the challenges that come with COVID and all the negative things, I think there's two real kind of blessings in disguise that have come from it. And one was like Tabitha was talking about, like going to work when you're sick and knowing that you shouldn't be there was always like the norm. Now there's just no excuse for it because you just literally can't do that because, you know, you might be passing COVID along. I know in the past, I've been guilty of that. A few years ago, I had some kind of respiratory illness, high fever. I had a surgery schedule that was full and I was like, I'm going to go in and I'm going to do the surgery schedule. And that's not something that I think that we'll have long-term leaving this. I think we recognize it's okay to take time off. You don't want to, you know, spread that illness to all your other staff members, all your other colleagues. And I think that COVID's helped kind of, because it's become a necessity, I think it's just more normalized. The other big thing is, for whatever reason, we're seeing such an increase in demand and new pets and new clients. I think it's finally given us this opportunity, if we take it, to establish these barriers and establish these boundaries with clients and recognize that maybe we can, you know, set some realistic expectations or some, you know, turn away some of them without worrying that, you know, if we turn away them, we're not going to make enough money because we're not going to see enough pets. Or in that fortunate situation where now this demand way exceeds what we can supply. And I think if we continue to try and meet all of that, you know, we'll just burn ourselves out, but we can use it and kind of harness it as an opportunity to kind of establish the clientele that we want. And I think we'll be better off for that.
A great insight and wisdom from Tabitha and Dr. Brunson. And I agree, the history of our profession, as well as many healthcare professions, is to give, give, give at the expense of self. Dr. Richard Boyasis talks about sacrifice syndrome, where we give and give without taking time for renewal for ourselves. And so, as Tabitha so well said, we need to learn to take care of ourselves. And it begins with self-awareness, the ability to talk about that, to reduce the stigma of seeking mental health services if that's what someone finds to be helpful, to recognize it in myself, to recognize it in my colleagues, and to do training. And as Tabitha said, sometimes it's necessary to move on. So I oftentimes ask myself, is the problem the job or is the problem me? I may need to have conversations with my manager, with the licensed counselor therapist, or with a coach to figure out whether it's me or the culture. And if it's the culture that I can't change, if I've asked for help, if I'm overworked, burned out, stressed, I may need to move on to another job. And again, it's self-care is your professional responsibility. It's your ethical responsibility. Self-care is not a selfish act. And we, as all professionals, need to learn to take better care of ourselves. And it may not be in the job we're currently in if that has not worked so far.
I think most of us agree that we're in this profession because we love it. And although it does have great rewards, it also, as we've discussed, has great risks as well. Veterinary medicine can be demanding on many levels. And this situation, we can all agree, has been exacerbated by the pandemic. People are feeling more isolated. They're working longer hours. There's a fear about contracting COVID. Tabitha, you, as you've said, you're passionate about helping colleagues deal with compassion fatigue and burnout. So can you tell us what some of the signs are to look for in both yourself and others?
I think it can be really hard to see it in yourself, because I'm a mental health advocate. I think medications are wonderful, better living through chemistry for animals and humans. And I remember when I was struggling to the point where I was suicidal, and I'm very extroverted, as you probably can tell, I didn't want to tell anybody. And that is something I will never forget, because that was a really eye-opening moment for me once I received help and started to feel better, because tomorrow does get better in most cases. But I remember being like, I'm extroverted. I have an amazing support system and I have insurance and I don't want to tell anyone that I don't want to live anymore. And I remember being like, I can't imagine not having a support system. And even looking for a psychiatrist, I was sobbing because I was over threshold. Like, it sounds easy to say, get find a psychiatrist. But when you're in it, guys, it's not. So I think it's really important for us to notice things in our friends and colleagues, because it can be hard to have these discussions. But honestly, I think, especially my experience and some of my colleagues' experiences, we don't realize we're suffering until we're swimming in compassion fatigue. And at that point, you know, professional help is indicated. Some of the things I look for is if I'm seeing a sudden change in mood, sadness and grief. So for example, I'm very bright and bubbly and talkative, and I didn't answer texts. That may not be weird for some people, but you know your colleagues' baselines, like their normal behaviors, just like with cats or dogs. I think of them as patients. I just relate everything to animals and it helps. If you notice any changes in that, that's weird. Or if they are always feeling sick, which, guys, so many of us have felt this. I used to get sick all the time. And it wasn't fake. It was real, because physical and mental health, brain health, same thing. If your colleagues have chronic headaches, chronic GI upset, they're sluggish, or they don't want to see their favorite client, or they called off a lot, that's a pretty big red flag. Because some people, they don't even relate it to work. Like, oh, they called off, they're difficult. Actually, they called off because they can't get out of bed because they've worked themselves to exhaustion. So I think recognizing if a colleague is like, I have a tummy ache, like that's so weird. And they say it a lot. If you notice that your colleague's going to the bathroom a lot, they might not tell you they were sobbing. They probably won't. Or I have tons of colleagues who've had headaches every day. Also, negativity or withdrawal. Again, it's hard because with COVID, most humans are over threshold right now without compassion fatigue. So most humans are short right now and irritable. And I'm not justifying people not being kind to each other, but being aware of that helps me be more empathetic. Being aware of your colleagues, and if they are short with you, maybe take a deep breath and say, I can get that blood for you. To be fair, they shouldn't be drawing blood. in that context, because that's just setting up everyone for failure. So like we used to have a code word at my old job where it was banana. And when you were telling that that person was over threshold or irritable, banana meant go smoke a cigarette if you smoke, go take a breath of air. They would leave for a minute, but it made such a difference. And we enabled each other to banana. It slowly created a culture where we had less crying in the bathroom. So there are tiny things that you can do that can make a difference for you and your colleague. Just being available, being aware of, being empathetic and supportive of each other, but not being like, oh, she was late today. Maybe being like, oh, she was late today. She has kids at home and it's a pandemic and they haven't been in school. Or if you're a manager and you notice that your staff is complaining a lot, but not being like, you're lucky you have a job. Whoa, that's a trigger for me. So instead, you should see that and see the function of the behavior. Like, why is she complaining more? Obviously, you can't make her work her perfect schedule, but can we at least talk about this instead of just getting angry at that employee and ignoring it? Our colleagues are family, and you guys are with each other all the time. You know what each other's baselines are. That's where I think being part of a team is really beautiful, because you do know each other really well. So you can better recognize those signs and help out. As Dr. Harkey was saying, I think it's really important to talk about it. Like, we made up banana at my job, but could you just have a chill closet that's painted lavender? Heck yes, you can. So there's a lot of things that you can do to enable that, start building up that healthy culture where, like, I might go to work and be like, I'm having a really bad brain health day. Can you go in with that euthanasia? Because we're not on all the time. That's another part of our job that's really hard. We have to be on at 100% emotionally all the time. Creating a culture where you ask for help, being there for each other, talking about mental health, acknowledging behavior changes. And again, it's all about teamwork.
So you said something about relating it back to animals, which is kind of how I've been thinking about this. Animals hide their pain, their illnesses, right? So I think of in people after a suicide, a lot of people will say it came out of nowhere. Do you think that's true? And this is for any of you. Do you think that's true that it really could come out of nowhere? Can you hide those signs, or are there always going to be warning signs? You just have to be aware and awake enough to notice them.
The research suggests that when someone goes on to die by suicide, that there's someone within their inner circle that probably identified warning signs that they were in distress or trouble. Probably one of the biggest gifts to our profession is the AVMA Wellbeing Certificate Program, that any member of the AVMA can take it free of charge. And included in that is the QPR Suicide Prevention Training. Within the last few weeks, is actually available to anybody in veterinary medicine. So I encourage everyone to take it. Banfield also has a program that's free to all members of the veterinary healthcare team. And we owe it to ourselves, as well as to the people that we work with, to be able to recognize warning signs and not to fix it. We're not psychologists, we're not therapists, we're not psychiatrists. Our job is to identify and help get someone to professional help. I think, again, suicide prevention training will not eliminate suicide. It will certainly help us begin to address the issue with ourselves as with everyone else.
I've lost many friends, unfortunately. And that goes through our head, like, what could I have done differently? So I'm really into cat pain. And people always say cat pain is subtle. I don't think it's subtle at all. I think they scream their pain. Now that I know that I've educated myself, I can see a cat's gait and see pain in 2 seconds, but 10 years ago I couldn't. So I have to probably say the same thing for humans. I don't think it's as subtle as we think. We just need to be aware of what to look for and identify it and be able to help. Being more self-aware and empathetic, it's a very broad statement. To actually do it is work. Like, I had to change the way I thought. Those first steps with colleagues, not making it about them, actually, you can be more successful in saying, for example, can you go get me some gauze? I'm going to do this. So again, it's not about them, but you're making them take a break, but not saying take a break. Because if you tell them to take a break, they're going to say, I'm fine. Just being proactive like that.
To your question about like the animal analogy or like animals hiding pain, I think a lot of this is like those chronic cystitis cats. So it becomes very apparent that there is an issue when this cat is urinating outside the litter box or in and out, in and out, in and out, and, you know, unproductively straining to go to the bathroom. But if we really think about it, it's not about the litter box. It's not about, per se, in a lot of these cases, there's environmental needs that have just gone unrecognized or unaddressed for a long time. And that's just a manifestation. That's just how that problem is showing up. And I think sometimes we take that attitude in like the workplace situation, like someone making small mistakes or sometimes even big mistakes. It's really easy just to assume like, oh, that was an accident. Like that's entirely personal responsibility situation. That's entirely on you. And I think it misses the point sometimes that we don't address, like, well, why did they make that mistake in the first place? You know, is there an issue in their personal life? Is there a system or lack of system at work that's just not supporting them to make that decision appropriately and make the right call in that situation? And I think too often we find ourselves blaming the person and not really questioning, like, what role do outside factors have in this? And what role do we have in this as their colleagues or as their employer? Or have we set them up for success? And so I think when we see those small mistakes made repeatedly, we should take a step back and say, like, okay, like, how can I help? How can I intervene in this situation? What role do I play in this situation? And I think there's this fear that if you acknowledge what you're seeing, that somehow you're responsible for fixing it. I don't think that's the case necessarily. I think you just have to be cognizant of that fact and then reach out to them and get their input or get their thoughts about the situation. I don't think that we necessarily have to have every answer. And I think that's why we're afraid sometimes to reach out to people.
Thanks again to Tabitha, Dr. Brunson, and Dr. Harkey. On our next episode, we'll continue our wellness series with part 2 of the panel discussion. Join us again in 2 weeks.
Until next time, stay safe and be well.
The Ohio Veterinary Medical Association is always seeking ways to enrich your member experience. To access resources mentioned in this episode, share your feedback and suggestions, and send us an email or voice message, please visit www.fullyvettedpodcast.com. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you prefer to listen so you never miss an episode. I'm Kristen Bennett, and on behalf of the OVMA, thanks for listening to Fully Vetted. We'll see you next time.